Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Travelers Broadcasting Service, Hartford, Connecticut.
Founded in 1925.
It's fascinating. The Travelers, you know, creates the radio station, and they did it really early, 1925. That was the very early days of radio.
WTIC is news.
This is Bob Steele speaking to you from the front yard of Victory House.
Here, the state capital, Connecticut, is paying its official tribute to the memory of the late President John F. Kennedy.
WTIC Radio presents a visit with Governor of the State, Chester Bowles, at home.
Most of what we hear about the energy crisis talks about a shortage of heating oil for the winter or added fuel for summer driving.
Ever since September 11th, though, it was just a matter of time before they actually sent us overseas.
Connecticut, we're all in this together.
Entertainment.
We hear from Montavani in the orchestra, Moon River.
We'll be playing two songs back to back.
That's one of the 8 million selling records that Artie Shaw and his orchestra recorded. It's called Back Bay Shuffle.
Morgan, this is Tony Orlando.
Opinion.
This is Rush Limbaugh on Connecticut's great radio station, WTIC 1080.
Ladies and gentlemen, your calls work. This is your legislators responding to a common sense approach.
Thank you, WTIC.
Sports.
Outboard races on the Connecticut River at Hartford.
And the Whalers jump 25 feet in the air with that emotional goal.
Connecticut is the basketball capital of the country for 2004.
Personality.
These look like peanut butter cookies.
They are.
Okay.
Our journey to celebrating 100 years of WTIC News Talk 1080. On Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham.
What a time we had last month, so let's continue it. It's the Broadcaster at 100. Welcome to our second installment of the series. I'm Morgan Cunningham, thanking everybody. I really do want to tell everybody how much I appreciate the feedback we received at the end of February for the very first edition of the Broadcaster at 100, which focused on our founding and formative years, going back to 1925, and taking everybody into the 1940s. I heard from a lot of people who were surprised at some of the audio that I was able to find. Many people learned something. Many people were aware of the story but enjoyed the presentation and hearing the story again. So no matter what part of the spectrum you fall into, I really appreciate your listening. WTIC Radio, I can tell you, appreciates it. And we are just happy to share our story with everybody as we march toward 100 years of broadcasting in Connecticut. This week on Spotlight Connecticut and the Broadcaster at 100 series that we're doing, we're going to focus on the Travelers Insurance Companies and how they ran WTIC AM and FM radio, as well as a TV station, WTIC TV. No, not Fox 61. This is the original WTIC TV Channel 3, which is now what you would know as WFSB Television. We founded that station. It went on the air September 23rd, 1957. In those earliest years, it's also worth noting that WTIC Radio contributed greatly to the television station, so that's what we'll focus on today. But before we can get into that, I do have some special remarks from a special guest, Connecticut U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. Now, you know him in the last decade or so as Connecticut's U.S. Senator. However, for many years before then, he's been involved in WTIC and newsmaking in Connecticut in numerous other capacities, starting in 1977 as the United States Attorney for the District of Connecticut, and then in 1984 becoming a member of the State House of Representatives. In 1987, he moved into the State Senate. He became the 23rd Attorney General of Connecticut in January 1991, and in more recent years again, U.S. Senator for Connecticut. Senator Blumenthal has been an advocate for local media, including WTIC, and radio as a whole.
Radio is really a lifeline, depending on it, not just for the news and entertainment, but also for emergency alerts. It's the lifeblood of communication in Connecticut.
I always hear Governor Lamont talking about how Connecticut has a history of innovation. And when I think back to WTIC's launch in 1925,
Travelers Insurance Company, that's what TIC stands for, gave birth to our station. Radio was new the way that we know it today. They made this investment in a community-funded radio station, and I think that that speaks to the history of Connecticut, doesn't it?
The history of Connecticut is intertwined with the history of WTIC, and beginning back in 1925, it has been a source of news and invention, new ideas for Connecticut. It spurred economic growth. I have distinct and very, very fond memories of being in the Gold Building, very, very top,
exactly,
seeing Connecticut out of the windows of the Gold Building. And of course, WTIC has moved to new location, but the basic spirit is the same, which is to inform, innovate, and inspire.
We have not changed our mission, that's for sure. And I remember when you and I were speaking about preserving AM radio for future generations, you had shared a little story about how it was January 6th, 2021. You were at the Capitol that day, that fateful day. And I called you for an interview when we went live on the air, and you were listening to WTIC, weren't you?
I was listening to WTIC on January 6th in the afternoon after we were removed from the floor of the United States Senate because we were under attack, and we went to a then undisclosed location, really out of communication with the rest of the world. And I was listening to WTIC after you called to find out what was going on. And I think that kind of is just one instance of how essential information that is unavailable elsewhere at the moment is so important.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about the future of AM radio and keeping it going for many more years to come?
As much as we see innovation in our world of technology and social media, WTIC is really a pillar of strength for Connecticut. It's a pillar of economic progress. It's a pillar of values and spirit. And I think its future is bright. I hope for its prosperity because I want to see it as a source of information to me and all of our children and grandchildren.
Senator, thank you for marking our 100-year anniversary. We really appreciate it. And I think we'll have you on for many more years to come.
I'm knocking on wood. I hope you're right. Happy 100th.
U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal, as we continue our second installment of the Broadcaster at 100 series, former WTIC producer Jim Stewart is up next. Jim's going to go into detail about content sharing efforts between WTIC Radio and the original WTIC TV Channel 3. I'm Morgan Cunningham with the Broadcaster at 100 anniversary series, and don't fear, we do have some archive audio coming up.
This is WTIC in Hartford.
Hey, it's former morning news anchor Angela Dias giving a salute to the Broadcaster at 100. Happy birthday, WTIC News Talk 1080.
I'm Morgan Cunningham with our second installment of the Broadcaster at 100 series, looking back at that partnership that existed between WTIC Radio and the original WTIC TV Channel 3 when the Travelers ran and owned the stations. After about 25 years of running WTIC AM 1080 and the fledgling years of WTIC FM, which was a simulcast of WTIC AM 1080, the management team at the Travelers obviously saw broadcasting as a very viable industry. With television showing promise, the Travelers team decided to invest in a third broadcast arm. It would become known as WTIC TV Channel 3. In going through the WTIC archives, I was able to find documentation dating to 1949 that showed the earliest blueprints for a television station, but it wouldn't launch until September 23, 1957. The first 30 seconds of that broadcast sounded like this.
WTIC TV, Channel 3, Hartford, Connecticut, operating on an assigned power of 100,000 watts video and 60,000 watts audio by authority of the Federal Communications Commission. WTIC-TV is owned and operated by the Travelers Broadcasting Service Corporation and maintains studios at 26 Grove Street in downtown Hartford. Our transmitter is located on Talcott Mountain in Avon, Connecticut.
The traveler sold all three broadcasting arms March 8, 1974. WTIC-TV was sold to Post Newsweek stations and became, at that point, WFSB-TV, Channel 3. But we're going to be focusing on the era when travelers ran all three broadcasting services and when radio and television collaborated under one roof. As such, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that the WTIC AM 1080 established stars often were used on WTIC-TV. Like this guy in that inaugural September 23rd telecast.
Bob Steele.
Ed, old boy. Thank you very much, Ed. It's awfully nice to see you here. And I remember the old days just like you do. Only I don't go as far back, but I remember those old days. And thanks for everything. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. And that's exactly what I feel you are tonight, and I'm sure you are. You're going to bring in a verdict of not guilty for us all, I hope. Not guilty of anything but some good TV. People have been added to the staff, something like 60, and lots of equipment has been brought in, tons and tons of it. Then I want to show you all about it on a film that we have ready for you now. This is one of the greatest moments of my life, friends. I am out of place with a teleprompter and all.
It's funny to hear Bob talk about using a teleprompter. You probably don't expect that when you think of Bob Steele. I'm Morgan Cunningham. It's the Broadcaster at 100, our second installment, looking back on that partnership that existed between WTIC Radio and the TV station that the Travelers founded, WTIC-TV, the original WTIC-TV, Channel 3. Our guest is Jim Stewart, who is a former WTIC producer. He did, at times, work both the radio and television side, but mostly focused on the TV end of things. And I loved when I talked to Jim the very first time, and he told me how hard it was in those days to get hired at WTIC at all, whether it was for radio or TV.
Yes, yeah, it was. It was, you know, the creme de la creme, you know, of broadcasting in the Hartford area. You know, it was WTIC 1925, you know, all of that. It was then controlled by the Travelers, so it was like going to work for an insurance company. A lot of red tape and questioning and to get into the station. Came up through the ranks there. I started on the television production department as a camera operator, and then worked my way up, became a producer-director, and ultimately executive producer of the television station.
And that all got started in 1963, right?
1963 was my start date. That's when I graduated from my school in New York.
Jim, I have a generalization that I'd like to share with you. It's 2024, and in this day and age, it certainly seems as if people in television kind of look down on people in radio, and people in radio kind of look down on people on television. But go back 60, 70 years, that was reversed. I also think it's important to note that the Travelers chose to put established WTIC radio personalities on the TV station rather than make new personalities on TV.
You just precisely nailed the difference that was present at every moment. Radio was king. They were the old guys. They were the guys that started this thing. They were the guys that made it successful. And TV were the upstart kids that came along and were totally not as good as broadcasting as as the radio crew. And so there was always that element of competition. Here you have two groups of people who worked for the same company and received a paycheck every week from that the Travelers Insurance Company paid for. So you had that corporate entity involved in the whole process, and there was always the air of competition between radio and television, and radio always took the position that, you know, we were here first, we know how to do this, you guys are the upstart kids who came along and pretty boys and stood in front of a camera and did your thing. So, and to a degree, that existed forever.
Jim, do you have any specific examples?
It was always a lot of division. And if a sharing of events like the GHO, radio and TV did the GHO. I produced and directed the camera coverage for the GHO on television, whereas they had radio guys on a boat out on the Connecticut River doing it from a radio standpoint on some millionaire's boat. And so in a sense, radio and TV were doing the same event, but competitively at the same time. Didn't make sense. It was a wasted energy in the eyes of a lot of people. And that went on in so many ways. We did, during the winter, we did the Travelers-sponsored Hartford Symphony concerts that were simulcast, radio and television. And even that, the same event, we had to work together as a team. The radio guys did their own sound and their own radio broadcast while we were televising the event. Instead of teaming together to make this a single event, it became a radio show and a TV show at the same time for the same company. Didn't make sense. Never. It still doesn't. That competition just never, ever resolved itself.
There were some things, Jim, though, that did remain separate. For instance, the Red Sox radio broadcasts on WTIC AM. There was no Red Sox partnership with the TV station at the time, but other resources were shared.
That was separate radio. They had the radio, the local radio broadcast rights at that time. And so it was a WTIC radio event. Later on, when UConn came along, they were also doing George Ehrlich, who's one of my dearest friends, the late George Ehrlich, who is the voice of sports for WTIC radio and television. George and I worked on the broadcast, and we did simulcast when TV finally came in. It was George Ehrlich and Floyd Richards. I don't know if you remember the Hap Richards show. It was a children's show on Channel 3, Floyd Richards. And the broadcast partners for both radio and TV, UConn, were George Ehrlich play-by-play and Floyd Richards, or Hap Richards, they called him then, was the color man. It all was splintered. You know, if it started out as radio only, and then it became radio and TV and simulcast. Very tricky.
Jim Stewart's our guest this week on Spotlight Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham with the Broadcaster at 100. This particular episode marking a century of WTIC, specifically looking at our partnership as a radio station with the original WTIC-TV. Jim was a producer there. At the beginning of 1962, WTIC Radio and Television moved into Broadcast House, which was on Constitution Plaza in Hartford. The Travelers hired composer Robert Maxwell in 1960 to write the Broadcaster Suite. It consists of four movements. The first movement is called Dedication Broadcast House. The second, Celebration WTIC AM. The third, Meditation WTIC FM. And the fourth, Anticipation WTIC TV. This work debuted the night of November 27, 1961, to launch Broadcast House. Here's the movement called Celebration WTIC AM, written by Robert Maxwell, commissioned specifically for WTIC.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here for Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats.
But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Celebration WTIC AM, our official theme song from the tail end of 1961. I'm Morgan Cunningham. It's the broadcaster at 100, and we'll continue with Jim Stewart in moments.
This is WTIC in Hartford.
Hi, I'm George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM, and you're listening to Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham. Happy birthday, WTIC News Talk 1080.
I'm Morgan Cunningham at Spotlight Connecticut, and we are celebrating the broadcaster at 100. Our second installment, looking at WTIC Radio and how it cooperated with WTIC-TV, the original WTIC-TV, which is now WFSB Channel 3, operating under the same roof run by the Travelers. Jim Stewart is our guest. He is a former producer. And when I was chatting with Jim, I couldn't believe that he had some special memories with Bob Steele, who he lived near. And again, as we mentioned earlier, don't forget that Bob was not only on the radio, but he was one of those established radio personalities that the Travelers used on WTIC-TV.
I shared a house with the then art director, a fellow by the name of Jimmy Glenn, the TV art director, or art director for the station. We lived on Cotwell Drive in Wethersfield, and right around the corner, maybe 100 feet, was Bob Steele's home on the main drag there. And whenever it snowed or rained, I would walk around the corner to Steele, jump in the car with him, and we would zoom in him broadcasting to work to cover the storm. And those were crazy days. And Steele was a guy, I used to joke about it. I told a story on the air one time about it. Steele would run around a corner to his house. he'd be sitting there in his great big black Cadillac with the engine running, and I said, Bob, why don't you have the car in the garage? He said, no, I want to be out here where it's really happening, you know, and the car's wet, and we're going to go through this stuff, and we're going to get, and he would live broadcast from the car on the way to work, do a simulcast. The guy, Steele, was crazy, I got to tell you. And I remember those mornings, I'm saying, what am I doing here? I got up in the middle of the night, I'm soaking wet, because he made me stand outside the car. I said, let me at least, you know, get the snow off the window. No, get in the car, we'll take care of it. So Steele was a one of a kind. But that was an every time it snowed occasion, we would race in and he would do his broadcast. And, you know, he would have callers calling in about, you know, their experiences with the storm. So you're going back, wow, into the recesses of my misbegotten youth here. That was a regular occasion.
Some, like myself, Jim, are probably fascinated by your Bob Steele story because Bob Steele is a legend in Connecticut, not just broadcasting, but Connecticut culture. However, others might feel that our connection to former presidents is pretty fascinating. Now, I need people to understand that before the age of the internet, presidents relied on local radio stations to get their message out, as well as television stations later on, and in this case, both radio and television. So while that might seem unusual to some by today's standards, go back 40-plus years, it wasn't weird. If any of you were to go through the notes of former WTIC anchor and personality Dick Bertel, you would find notes about his encounter and the station's encounter with President Johnson in 1964. But Jim Stewart takes us back to Christmas 1963, which is just after the assassination of former President Kennedy.
It's a horror story. We were doing a broadcast. It was just the Secret Service guy and President Johnson.
And where was this being done?
It was being done from Constitution Plaza.
So he was in Connecticut.
Right. In the radio third, there used to be a third floor lobby to broadcast house. And in the lobby was President Johnson, Jim Stewart, and a Secret Service guy who was a total pain in the ass. Very fresh in my mind. And
well, what was so difficult with this Secret Service guy?
Because it was shortly after the assassination of JFK, and Johnson had assumed the presidency, and he was coming to Hartford to do the Christmas show. We did a light-up Constitution Plaza Christmas show. And during that program, where we were in the old third-floor lobby, which no longer exists because the building doesn't, he had to take a phone call from Washington, and I had a fight with the Secret Service guy and get Johnson separated from his microphone for that broadcast and on the air for whatever they needed in Washington.
And so he didn't want that conversation to go out live?
Right.
I see.
And he was ready to tear his mic off, and I said, you know, Mr. President, hold on. Let me help you. Because I helped him take the mic off, got him connected with the phone, and then I was off the air. I wasn't permitted to be part of that conversation. But the Secret Service guy was angry at me because I took control of the situation. You know, it was crazy time, just a crazy, crazy event.
Jim, a story like that really might surprise people, just the access that we had to presidents.
We had a lot of presidential visits. We shared them.
Obviously, this is in a post-JFK assassination world, but you still had that access. In fact, you stayed with WTIC-TV when it transitioned to WFSB-TV. That takes us to the Carter years. Jim?
Well, so much of it was so close to the assassination of JFK that obviously, you know, we had killed a president in Dallas that day, and a lot changed. I remember Jimmy Carter was very, very... I did a game show on TV and I had Jimmy Carter as my guest host. He had a we had a guest each week pick the numbers. It was a quiz type show, but I was able to get Jimmy Carter to come in and pick the number. It was a Connecticut lottery show, and I was directing that show, and Carter agreed. He was in town. We have a guest on the show pick the winning number for that week. You know, you'd go out and buy a lottery ticket. If you had the winning number, you were rich. And Carter agreed to come on the show live and pick the number. But he had other business to do that day that had nothing to do with me or that show. And so he couldn't guarantee me when he would arrive. So we had agreed that when he shows up, he goes to the stage manager, a fellow by the name of Don Fleming, who is now deceased, was my stage manager. And Carter was instructed, let Mr. Fleming know when you're ready to go, and we'll put you on the air. And so he picked a number. It was during this game show. The President of the United States was incredible. And he couldn't have been nicer, Carter. I wasn't even a Carter fan, but I had to like him. So, again, these memories are now, they're almost foggy because they happened so long ago and at a very difficult time. But that was one occasion where he was a tremendous help to us and just the nicest guy he could be.
Would you call up the White House or Washington and say, hey, I'm with WTIC in Hartford, and we're looking to book the president if he's in town or if he can come to town? Is that how you would go about it, or would you find out other ways?
No, it didn't happen that way. It happened accidentally. He just happened to be in the area, and we found out about it, and we took whatever steps of communication we had available to us. And right now, sitting in my chair here, my memory of it is foggy, but he was gracious enough to agree to it.
Jim, we have some special WTIC radio in partnership with WTIC TV audio coming up. But before that, we do have to take a break. And before the break, we're going to take a mini in-program break. Huh? What am I talking about? As we continue the broadcaster at 100, this is a recording of a WTIC radio and television commercial that I found on a reel-to-reel tape of audio called WTIC Remembrances Number 6, and it's dated 1965. It's a commercial from one of our then sponsors, Schaefer Beer. And I think it's absolutely fascinating just to hear what commercials were like in this era.
Schaefer is the one beer to have when you're having more than one. Schaefer, pleasure doesn't fade even when your thirst is done. The most rewarding flavor in this man's world for people who are having fun. Schaefer is the one beer to have when you're having more than one.
Whenever friends stop by to visit, give them a warm welcome with a cold glass of Schaefer beer. There's no friend to sight in this man's world than a tall, frosty glass of Schaefer's. So don't be caught short. Make sure you always have extra cans of Schaefer on ice.
Schaefer is the one beer to have when you're having more than one.
Now that is a commercial. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080 Spotlight Connecticut, continuing the broadcaster at 100, our second edition, looking back on the partnership that existed between WTIC Radio and the original WTIC TV that all operated under one roof. Now up next is some very special radio audio that involves some help from our friends at the original WTIC TV on President Lincoln. What?
This is WTIC in Hartford.
I am Governor Ned Lamont, and you're listening to Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham. And we're celebrating the broadcaster at 100 years old.
The original WTIC TV Channel 3 hosted a program called Perception. Our guest, Jim Stewart, was a producer of it. Dick Pertell hosted. On May 31st, 1960, they hosted an episode of Perception called Lincoln in Hartford. WTIC Radio, sharing resources with the television station, broadcast its own version of the show as a special called The Day Lincoln Came. It's a half hour long, but I trimmed it down to a few minutes so you can get an idea how the radio and TV stations collaborated in that era. This truly is a fascinating listen. Enjoy.
The visit of that Springfield, Illinois lawyer, Long Abe Lincoln, to Hartford 100 years ago was relegated to an insignificant page in that pre-Civil War history. Now historians have given that visit its due credit, that, in fact, Lincoln's presence dispelled political disunion and strengthened Republican Party ranks not only in Hartford, but throughout the state. But let's go back. Back to The Day Lincoln Came.
This is Bob Ellsworth speaking to you from the new Union Station on Asylum Street, just east of Spruce. We're waiting impatiently, may I say, for the arrival of the Hartford and Springfield train from Albany carrying Mr. Lincoln. The crowd here is swelling constantly in anticipation of greeting him. Many Republican state officials are here. I can see O.R. Post, the corresponding secretary of the Hartford Republican Club. Weren't you instrumental in getting Mr. Lincoln to visit Hartford?
Yes, I was. I wrote to Mr. Lincoln in care of my good friend Horace Greeley, the New York Tribune.
Well, do you feel that Mr. Lincoln's presence here will benefit the party, Mr. Post?
Of course. The local campaign begins in a few weeks.
Here she comes!
Yes, the train is on its way into Union Station on Asylum Street. Yes, the Springfield-Hartford train is finally arriving.
There he is! There's Lincoln!
Well, I guess that must be Mr. Lincoln. Anyway, there's a tall gentleman who looks like the photographs I've seen. I understand my colleague Ken Allen has found a better vantage point, so over to you, Ken.
I'm overlooking the scene from about 20 yards behind and above you, Bob. There's such a crowd, it'll be a wonder if anyone gets off. But there's Lincoln. He's a tall man, very tall. He's carrying a small bag. I must say he's a gangling sort of individual. His arms sort of hang by his side, and his suit appears ruffled and ill-fitting, undoubtedly due to the long ride. Bob Ellsworth has been able to reach the party, so back to his location.
How was your trip?
Gentlemen, I feel somewhat like a turtle, and a turtle just peering out from under its shell.
This is Ken Allen speaking to you from our vantage point just outside the front entrance to the City Hall in Hartford. The crowd, which began gathering as early as 7 o'clock, has now overflowed into the street. Market Street, clear back as far as the Hartford Carpet Company, is a mass of humanity, all wanting a glimpse of Abraham Lincoln, lawyer from Illinois. What's your name, sir?
Atwater, Francis Atwater.
Do you live in Hartford, sir?
Nowhere else, 129 Homestead Avenue. I was originally from Terryville.
I see. What do you think of Lincoln's visit?
A godsend. I have read a good deal of this man, and I like the things I've read. To free slaves is one thing, but to know and understand the resultant problems is another.
This is Ken Allen. I'm alongside the party now going into the hall where Mr. Lincoln will give his address.
Mr. Lincoln, I have the privilege of presenting our esteemed and popular governor, William A. Buckingham.
Governor Buckingham, I have long awaited this meeting.
Let's have Lincoln, Governor. None of them long-winded speeches.
The governor receives a thunderous welcome. He steps to the edge of the platform and is raising his arms for order.
As a brilliant Illinois lawyer, our guest this evening fought and won many a case for his fellow men. As an equally daring yet understanding orator, he even managed to squelch the eloquent, rapid-fire oratory of a Stephen Douglas. His stand on the issue of slavery is a matter of record. He represents more than a candidate for the leadership of this nation. He represents the glory of the Republic and the Republican Party. I give you the Honorable Abe Lincoln of Illinois.
Governor Buckingham, Mr. Sill, party members and citizens of this great state of Connecticut. We think slavery is morally wrong. Every man, black, white, or yellow, has a mouth to be fed and two hands with which to feed it. And that bread should be allowed to go to the mouth without controversy. Some men would make it a question of indifference. As we understand our duty, let us do it.
Ken Allen is down on the street, so for the reaction down there, we switch to him.
Thank you, Bob. While the exact text of Mr. Lincoln's speech has not been fully heard down here, the people seem to have sensed its meaning, for at times it was so quiet you could hear his voice carry out through the windows.
He'll make a great president!
You mean he's a rank abolitionist, that's what.
Leaving on the Hartford and New Haven by the 305 train, Hartford never saw him again. WTIC has prepared this tribute in commemoration of the 100th anniversary of Lincoln's visit to Hartford. While the facts expressed were based upon historic record, the dialogue between the principals was, of course, fictional, reflecting, however, the views and attitudes of those principals attested to in many documents. We extend our appreciation to the sources used in researching this project, to J. Doyle DeWitt and his Lincoln in Hartford, and to an article by Nelson R. Burr, Abraham Lincoln Comes to Hartford, printed by the Hartford Courant on Sunday, February 11th, 1951, and to the staff at the Connecticut State Library, which helped to uncover additional facts. The Day Lincoln Came was written and directed by Paul Gianfrido, technical engineering by Norman Kiernan. In our cast were Bill Stook, Dick Partridge, Gloria Delaferra, Lester Hartnett, Frank Broder, Dave Calkins, Dason DeCourcy, Ken Weldon, Ed Montandon, and Desiree Jacobs, members of the Travelers Beacon Players and Mark Twain Maskers. The announcers, Ken Allen and Bob Ellsworth. This is Bruce Kern.
I kept the credits in number one because it's the right thing to do, but number two to demonstrate the amount of effort and staff that went into putting together a show like that 64 years ago. And for a final word, Jim Stewart, our producer, what do you think the future holds for WTIC Radio?
Well, first of all, I think the future for TIC Radio is what it's always been. It's going to be there in some form, probably forever, because it has been there forever. You know, in the 1920s, I think there's a definite future. It may not look the same, but what does? Nothing looks the same or is the same.
Jim, thanks for coming on. We'll have another edition of the Broadcaster at 100 the last Saturday afternoon of next month. Catch you then.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.